97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
Welcome to the gun show. Is that what you're playing there, Carl? I thought that's what I heard him scream.
That's a woman singing.
Is that Lizzie Hale?
No, it's a band called In This Moment, and it's 11 years old, and I just found it, and I said, oh, it's called Welcome to the Gun Show.
And how fitting for Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors this weekend. Mark Cox in here, along with Bo Matthews and Carl Middleman. And glad you're back with us. That's never been my kind of rock.
No. You liked the first 10 seconds of the song.
I liked the guitar part.
And then
she
sang.
Yeah, don't need that.
I was at the Party Cove one time, and I was on a houseboat as a guest, and the only music they were playing was just like that for 2 days. Finally, on day three...
Did you jump off and try to drown yourself?
No, I went over to like the third boat from us, and I borrowed an Eagle CD, and I came back and put it in. Oh,
it was a peaceful, easy feeling.
I needed a cigarette after that. Only one time at the Party Cove. That's for the record. Anyway.
Only one time in your life?
Yeah.
Well, that was enough of you there for 3 days.
I'm good.
I was there one time, just passing through, just to say I've been there, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's my story. I'm sticking to it. And
are there pictures?
And I see some guy. It was in the fall, actually. There weren't a lot of people out there. There was some guy out there with a wetsuit on diving.
Yeah.
Then I'm thinking, I'm not sure I'd want to be in the water, particularly at the bottom of that particular cove.
Absolutely not.
No, thank you. I'll find my great outdoor activity somewhere else.
A lot of outdoor bathrooming going on down there at the Party
Cove.
Yeah,
you got to wonder what the acidity level is, the pH level is in the water that occasionally down there. Hopefully you're enjoying the great outdoors this weekend.
It's Party Cove weekend.
I know. There'll probably be lots of people down there. Maybe they're listening to us on their podcast while they're floating in Party Cove right now.
Our goal next year should be to do this show from Party Cove.
Okay.
With a wetsuit.
Who's got a boat?
Bo has a boat.
You can rent them.
Ooh, Bo doesn't want us to use his boat.
It's too small.
We're going to need a bigger boat. That's what I think. That's what we're going to need.
Hey, speaking of podcasts.
Oh, yes. Let me announce this, by the way. Rolled it out this past week for anybody who's interested. So I know that if you love guns and you love the great outdoors, you might enjoy a good pour of bourbon.
What?
So what I've done is come up with a podcast. It's called The Mash. So you can go to Odyssey.com and find it. You can go to 971talk.com and find it under the podcast link.
The Mash.
And it's all about bourbon, Bo.
I love it.
It's about bourbon, and it's about things that go well with bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
It could be hunting,
ice,
could be cigars,
poker,
could be
poker.
Could be lots of things. Whatever I want it to be, and I'm taking suggestions from people who listen as well, but you can download it and listen. So we're talking about Four Roses Bourbon. I'm talking to one of the, basically a walking history book on Kentucky bourbon in there. Talking about the Kentucky Bourbon Trail. We're talking about Buffalo Trace Distillery and the officials from down there.
Are you actually tasting while you're doing the podcast?
I plan to.
Okay.
For the first three, I have not done that yet because I'm normally recording these in the morning.
You want the rhythm.
I want the rhythm, right?
Oh, but, and you're recording them in the morning. That could be an issue.
We are going to be doing some tastings, though. That's my plan. But anyway, download it, listen to it, tell me what you think, give me your feedback. It's called The Mash.
I love it. And you know what I love more about it than the name is that it's driving him nuts, Carl nuts, because he wants to play the Monster Mash, and that's the only thing he can come up with that for that as a theme song.
There are a lot of songs about bourbon. There are a lot of songs about bourbon. But the reason I played the gun show is because of our first guest.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's get to Rex Curley. He is with the St. Charles Gun Show. It's going to be all weekend at the St. Charles Convention Center. Rex, welcome into the show.
Hey, thank you very much. I appreciate you having me.
Absolutely. I have been a guest at your gun shows in the past, and I am looking forward to the one that's going on all weekend.
It's going to be a good one. We've had that annual Labor Day show now for about 11 years, and it's always very, very successful for us. And always got a, you know, a great representation of vendors, both locally, and then a lot of them come in from rural Missouri, and a lot of things that folks have never seen before.
So you won't be disappointed if you go to it. And I plan to get up there this weekend because I'm staying in town. I will not be at the Party Cove. But what are some of the, other than guns and knives, what are some of the other vendors that you have there? Do you have ice cream of the future? Do you have the My Pillow set up? Do you have what other things are going on there?
You know, for a while there, we did have a gentleman coming in selling pillows at the shows that were very popular, but I haven't seen him in a while. But our main thing that we'll have there, we'll have an awful lot of ammunition for sale. And at the gun shows, you can actually get all the ammunition, and the price is going down on it. And so that is a really good thing. And then just an awful lot of like gun cases and holsters and, you know, any and all accessories. And then the other thing that we have at the shows is we have a lot of buyers on site for those wanting to sell their personal collections or maybe their guns that they're not using anymore. And we just ask that if you bring them in, we have a police officer that'll check them at the front door for you. But please make sure that you pre-check them before you come to the show. Just make sure they're unloaded and everything. And then we've got these buyers in there, and it's not unusual for them to buy a $10,000 or even a $20,000 gun collection at a show.
Wow.
Yeah. And they have to be in a case, is that correct? Like when you walk into a gun range?
Yeah. Okay. Just have it cased and just make sure that you check and make sure it's unloaded.
Yep, the police officers are always great about that. They always check you in there at the front door. And, you know, speaking of ammo, you mentioned that it's always a great place. I would agree. I came out there last year looking for specifically some 30-30 Win, which I hadn't been able to find anywhere else. And it's there. Sometimes you got to get there early, but you can find it. And I'm glad to hear that you guys have got plenty of it now.
You know, even back in the worst shortages, we always had ammo at the shows, and I don't know how the vendors do it, because I can go into any sporting goods store around, you know, back at that time, and I mean, or Walmart or anywhere, and the shelves would be bare, and then I would walk into the gun show, and they would have a full complement of ammo, so they really never did let anybody down. And then the nicest thing about the ammunition right now is it is starting to soften a little bit on its price, and there, so you can come in and actually buy some stuff and get some bargains on some ammo now.
So people go to rkshows.com to find out more details?
That's correct.
Yep, good. And what's the admission price again, Rex?
The admission is $14, and that's good for 2 days. They just get a stamp, and they can come back in for Sunday.
Nice, and I believe I got a card in the mail the other day giving me $2 off.
What?
Oh.
Yeah, and you can get that and go into the website as well.
Oh, nice.
I'm in.
Okay. I like it.
Well, that's great. And is it one of those things that you cannot get through the whole thing in one day, and that's why you do it, the pricing this way?
Yeah, and we like to, if the customer's there and if they're close to a deal, you know, on Saturday, and then they go home and think about it, we like to give them that option to come back in Sunday, you know, without having to pay again.
Sounds good. Rex Curley, thanks for joining us. We'll send people to rkshows.com.
All right. Well, hey, thank you very much, gentlemen. I appreciate it.
All right. We appreciate that. Hey, you're listening to Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Coming up, we're going to talk more about the future plans for the Missouri Firearms Coalition and what they'll be looking for to defend your Second Amendment rights in the next legislative session. We're back in a minute.
I won't play that awful song again. I will tease us with something else we're going to talk about today.
Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. Mark Cox, Bo Matthews, Carl Middleman.
We are
here. And in this segment, we are going to be talking about guns, gun laws, how it works in the politics, ether, and it is brought to you by Razorback Armory, a gun concierge. If you've been to gun stores, been to gun shows. You've never been to a gun concierge, Razorback Armory in De Pere on Manchester Road, a half mile east of 270. Find them. Directions, all the information about the company at RazorbackArmory.com. Tell them Bo sent you.
I have got to get me one of those.
A concierge?
Yeah. That's fantastic. They take care of everything for you, right?
That would be on your staff with your butler, chauffeur, you know, right?
Yard crew, everyone.
We'll driver.
I'm just kidding.
Speaking of, did you ever see the Ellen DeGeneres stand-up bit called Relatable?
I have watched
it was on Netflix.
I have watched as little Ellen DeGeneres as I possibly can in my life, but go ahead.
Take a moment. Take 10 minutes, watch the first 10 minutes. It's funny because she claims to be relatable like you with a chauffeur and a private pilot. Am I right?
Yes, she's making fun of her nice image. She understands that she's a jerk.
So this must have been an old bit because now we know the truth?
No, this came out right before all of that came out.
Timing is everything. Timing is everything. Absolutely. Hey, by the way, it is Second Amendment Radio, and we want to talk about the Second Amendment right now with our friend Alex Saltzman, political director for the Missouri Firearms Coalition. Alex, welcome back.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
Hey, doing great. Good to get you back on here. Last weekend, I believe it was, we were talking about the Second Amendment Preservation Act, which you guys helped get put in place, which was a fantastic effort. But since then, we've heard there are going to be several challenges to that law, and we wanted to get you back on here and talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So last week, the Cole County judge rejected St. Louis's suit against SAPA, and which throughout that whole process, nothing there actually surprised us, which was good. We're not actually sure where the appeal is going to be. Most likely it'll land in the Missouri Supreme Court at some point. But we're really more overly concerned, not with the local efforts to overturn SAPA, but we're gearing up and putting everything we've got into what we all know is coming, which is the federal government is going to be challenging SAPA soon enough.
Yeah, and you know, of course, the feds are going to bring the full weight of the Department of Justice, and they're going to, I've been told, maybe threaten to withhold funding, and I mean, they've got all kinds of plans up there.
Yep, and there's a reason that Merrick Garland and Joe Biden have specifically targeted Missouri SAPA law. You know, there are 9 other states that have got some form of SAPA law on the books, but we're the only ones to actually get it across the finish line without amending out the teeth. You know, we passed our SAPA law with an enforcement mechanism, and we're the only state out of 10 who tried to actually get that done. And the federal government and Joe Biden, they've got a vested interest in making sure that they nip that in the bud quick before other states see that that can be done. They're all watching what's happening on Missouri right now. We are very much in need of holding the front line on the Second Amendment, and right now Missouri is on that front line in a big way.
Alex, it's great to have you on the show. And I just want to point out, and I think I text you, Mark, when I saw this, that, you know, a government that is trying to disarm its citizens, the USA, has now just armed the Taliban in Afghanistan to the teeth. And we've got to remember this. And we also, last week when we talked about this, we talked about the sensationalized headlines that the SAPA bill is really to hurt the investigations on a federal level with the state level. Talk about that to the listeners about how that's not true. Those are just headlines.
Yeah, I would not be tuning in to any of the legacy media or the mainstream liberal media. They're always going to have a very biased reporting slant against anything pro-Second Amendment. We've all seen that. That shouldn't be anything newsworthy to us. I think we're all used to it. Just turn it off. I mean, you're not going to get anything factual. You're only going to get spin when you're dealing with, you know, the big legacy media, CNN, ABC, CBS, all that. And even some of the big local media outlets that, you know, like you've got the Post, they're always going to be of a left-leaning worldview. So you're never going to get your actual facts, the things that you're going to actually care about knowing. You're just going to get a lot of fluff, I guess.
Yeah.
A lot of opinion pieces.
Yeah, that's true. And they're always coming after us in some fashion. That's why I drive home to people all the time how important it is to join the Missouri Firearms Coalition, to join the Second Amendment Foundation, and these other organizations that are really on the front line of sort of standing sentry for our Second Amendment rights. They're constantly under assault. I'm amazed by that. I heard the director of the CDC the other day, Dr. Walensky, talking about the fact that gun violence, which they love that phrase, it needs to be treated as a public health crisis. So here we go again. The Obama administration tried that tactic 5 years ago, and they're back. They're back with the Biden administration doing the exact same thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're seeing very clearly that it works. You know, if you tell people, well, do it for the kid, do it for the puppy, do it for the overall, the general good, you know, you can get people to give up and chip away their own freedoms. And that's exactly what we're seeing here. Missouri has to hold the line. If we can hold the line and protect the Second Amendment Preservation Act that we just passed, fight the feds off and protect our rights, other states are going to see that, and they're going to put those enforcement mechanisms into their SAPA laws. If not, if we can't fight off the feds and Missouri SAPA law falls, then us, along with every other state in the union, are really going to be left defenseless against the gun control agenda of this administration or any other in the future. It really is a serious battle right now. And I know we're all tired and we're all burnt out and feels like we've been fighting forever, but we've got to carry on.
You know, I want to interject this analogy. I saw the headline about Governor Abbott in Texas having the heartbeat bill for 6 weeks. As long as they're a heartbeat, they can't abort, right? And when I saw Biden's comment, that he said it blatantly violates the constitutional right established under Roe v. Wade and upheld as precedent for nearly a half a century. And he calls it outrageous. And to be changing the Constitution, I was like, what? What? And this is the only area that we're talking about changing?
Right. He holds a decision by the Supreme Court to be more important than the Second Amendment to the United States Constitution.
And the hypocrisy there is just mind blowing. Just absolutely mind blowing. I mean, look, the whole reason they're trying to fight the Second Amendment Preservation Act is because they're trying to say that, you know, it's not going to be constitutional, when in fact this is the same language, the anti-commandeering language that the states like California and other states use for their sanctuary cities and states. So this is, the federal government will completely look the other way when liberal states use this to ignore federal edicts, but not for conservative states or laws they don't like. But so we've definitely got to push back and keep calling out that hypocrisy.
And they're trying to use the supremacy clause as the excuse, but that was sort of planned on as the bill was put together, correct?
Oh, absolutely. We knew that was coming. We had anticipated that from the start. So we made sure that the strategy that we used a strategy that had been supported by Supreme Court precedent for over 170 years. So we knew that the language was solid. We knew that it was a good bill. We knew that it would be upheld in court. We just had to, you know, swim through the left's rhetoric. You know, they'll do anything and everything and say anything and everything to get people to do what they need them to do, including lie and mislead. So you'll find a lot of that when you're talking about gunfights or anything, really.
So, Alex, I know a lot of these issues are discussed long before the session starts up again in January. But I did hear a state legislator, or read a comment from a state legislator, a Republican, which shocked me, that said that there were some problems with that law that they wanted to go back in and fix. Have you heard that talk?
Yeah, absolutely. That doesn't shock me at all. If you had any idea the uphill battle we faced just to get SAPA passed to begin with? Now, I'll remind everyone that we've got a super majority control Republicans everywhere.
Supposedly.
The House, the Senate, the executive branch. It should not have been hard to ask that our Second Amendment rights were protected. But we basically had to chew through the moderates to get this bill passed. So it doesn't surprise me at all that they're still bitter about it, that they still have special interest and people in their ears telling them that, you know, we've got to undo it, we've got to fix it, whatever. There are plenty of people in Missouri at the Missouri Firearms Coalition that will be there and be ready to make the phone calls, make the emails, go visit your legislator. We'll do everything we have to do to defend SAPA, just like we're doing now. I mean, we've spent tens of thousands of dollars already defending SAPA just with the Cole County case, and we are anticipating a six-figure battle coming up when the feds start knocking on our door.
Wow. And what's amazing to me is that, you know, you seem very calm, Alex, and we appreciate you being on the show. But even talking to Patrick Holland last week about SAPA, which he calls SAPA, we're still trying to figure out the pronunciation of that.
Oh, either one works.
Yeah, I know.
SAPA, SAPA.
But the fact that both you and he spoke of, we knew this was coming. We thought this was coming. You have pre-planned. You have thought ahead, unlike our federal government has done on a global scale. So it sounds like that you guys are ready to defend this at the legislative level.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is not a new fight. We've been fighting for SAPA since 2014 in Missouri. So the arguments aren't new. It's just, you know, the players come in and think that they've got brand new, fresh ideas when this is, you know, the same lame, sorry excuses that they've used in the past and for other things that, you know, we knew were going to be brought up. So we did our best to make sure that the law was going to be sound, because we knew, obviously, being the strongest in the country, that it was going to be challenged ad nauseum by the left. So we were prepared for that. Now all we're having to do is try to rebuild back the resources so that we can actually keep defending, because the federal fight is going to be a whole nother ball game than the local efforts to try to get rid of SAPA.
Alex Saltzman, our guest from the Missouri Firearms Coalition. Alex, what's next? What do you have your sights on? In other words, we know you're going to defend SAPA, but what else are you planning to fight for in the next legislative session?
Well, right now, the main thing that we're focused on is defending SAPA in court. So we don't know, like we said, we're not sure where the appeal is coming, but we're going to stand at the ready for that. And then, of course, we're trying to do everything we can to prepare for the federal fight that is coming with the feds over SAPA. But then we have some things that we can work on for the legislative session next year. We've all saw Mark McCloskey and his wife get in trouble when they defended their home against that mob of protesters. Our Stand Your Ground law, it's become really clear to us that there are some major deficiencies within our statute here in Missouri. So we're going to take a stab at that and see if we can't clean that up so that never happens to anyone again. We also are always going to be fighting against the gun-free zones. We've got 17 or 18 different gun-free zones in Missouri, so we'll be doing what we can to push back against that. And then always, of course, we'll be on defense defending against the red flag laws and anything else that they try to amend into other bills as far as the Second Amendment goes, because they're very tricky, and a lot of times it's not even the left that we're defending it against. It's the moderate right, it's the middle right. So all of those regular old R's behind their names that aren't really defenders of freedom. They're just people that have won popularity contests.
I think keeping it simple, stupid is a phrase that comes to mind right now, because there's so many different interpretations of the Castle Doctrine, for instance, that need to be explained, because even different concealed carry instructors believe different things. I've talked to a couple of different ones, and I'm like, no, I don't think that guy's right. And then this guy says, no, he's wrong, I'm right. So even understanding it, like you just mentioned, it's tricky.
Yeah, very true.
Yeah, and you know, it gets tricky because, you know, we get down into the weeds. We're talking, you know, carve-outs for use of force in the self-defense statutes, and, you know, the assault statutes need work because there's no carve-out for self-defense there either. That's why Patricia McCloskey was charged with assault. You know, so it is a lot of legalese, but it's definitely worth sparsing out, because these are people's lives that are impacted by these laws. So we want to make them broad enough that they cover fully the Second Amendment rights of all Missourians, but we've got to start drilling down and really start protecting individual circumstances, very similar to what we saw in St. Louis last summer.
Alex, we appreciate your time. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Anytime.
All right. Alex Saltzman there, Missouri Firearms Coalition. Hey, coming up on Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors, Did you get a chance to humble yourself this week? Dove season opened. I've done that before. It's not too late, but we're past opening day. We're going to talk to the, of course, the certified wildlife biologist who's in charge of all that for the state. We'll be right back.
Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors. It is time to go outdoors. Along with Mark Cox, I'm Bo Matthews. Carl Middleman, DJ extraordinaire. Great song for this.
I didn't go with the Prince, which was too obvious. This is more subtle. And nobody knows that the name of the song is Edge of 17. They just call it White Winged Dove.
Well, thanks for clearing that up. This segment brought to you by Chuck's Boots. You still got a chance to win a Polaris General 1000 side-by-side simply by being a loyal customer. Even if you've never shopped at Chuck's Boots online at chucksboots.com or Fenton or St. Peter's, still go because it'll turn you into a very appreciated customer. Go to chucksboots.com to get registered to win. They've teamed up with Thoroughgood. And you can also go to Chuck's Boots Facebook page to get registered to win the Polaris side-by-side from Thoroughgood and Chuck's Boots.
Yeah, we need to get in there and get signed up. Let me welcome our guest right now, Joel Porath, joining us. He is the Wildlife Section Chief for the Missouri Department of Conservation. And I understand that dove season opened up this week. And boy, I tell you what, Joel, welcome into the show.
Hey, thank you. Good morning, everyone.
I went dove hunting for the first time, I don't know, seven, eight years ago. Took my kid out there with me. I've never been so humbled in my life.
It's hard.
And why?
Because I couldn't hit them. Because they're, unlike those little clay pigeons that move away at a decreasing rate of speed, dove don't do that.
At a steady rate of speed.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they can move, not a steady path.
Oh, they can turn left or right. Oh, there's the trick.
They can, and then you throw the wind factor in there, and especially on a windy day, you better have a lot of shotgun shells.
Oh, I know. I know. We limited out that day. I took my kid, who was a good trap shooter. He was humbled as well, but he caught on to it faster than I did with those young eyes. I'll have to tell you that.
So are they good eating, Joel? Are they good eating? Is that the reason people do it, or what is it?
They are good eating. You know, there's a couple different things. One, it's the first season that really opens up, and so there's folks that have been, you know, itching to get out and enjoy nature all summer, and the dove hunting is the first, you know, real opportunity to do that. You know, you don't need a lot of equipment. You don't need a lot of good camo. You know, you can sit there with your friends and visit and have a great time just, you know, practicing your shooting. And yeah, they are really good to eat. There's many different ways to cook them. A lot of folks think that they're pretty small, but, you know, with a limit of 15, you know, you can grill them, broil them, fry them, all different types of ways to cook them. They're very good.
Yeah, that was our experience. And you know, maybe that's something to talk about for just a moment. I wonder, does the Missouri Department of Conservation make suggested, do you have a suggested cookbook for wild game? Because, you know, whenever I go hunting with friends, whether it's for pheasant or chucker or whatever it happens to be, there's always somebody in the group who goes, oh, I got a great recipe for that. I don't seem to be able to pull that off very well. I have to go to their house and let them cook it for me. Because honestly, I'm just not very talented at getting that. Because there's a key to getting that sometimes gaminess out of it.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. On our mdc.mo.gov website, there is all different types of recipes. And then there's also a wild game cookbook that we put out. And so that'd be a great opportunity for you and your listeners to take a look at that.
Is there a restaurant in St. Louis that features wild game like that? Does the Big Chief Dakota Grill do dove? I've never heard of a restaurant that did that.
Yeah, there's not, and that's you know, that's one of the reasons why we are where we are in the world today. That, you know, around the turn of the century, there was the game markets were abounding, and so that was the demise of a lot of different game species as folks were able to go out and hunt them and then sell them to the market. And so when market hunting was outlawed, then a lot of those game species started to come back. And so that's the you know, the North American model of wildlife conservation is that they're for the people and managed, you know, by the conservation department, but they're not for sale.
Do you keep track of the dove season the way the conservation department keeps track of others? I mean, in terms of the number harvested, or how exactly do you guys approach that?
We do. There's a couple different methods that are utilized. One is putting metal bands on their legs, same thing that we do with waterfowl, and there's a lot of different states that do that. And so you can utilize band recovery data. So, you know, say, for example, there's a dove that's banded in Missouri and it's harvested in Texas. And once you compile all that information, you can get kind of an idea of where they were harvested and then extrapolate to the numbers that are harvested. We also have surveys that are conducted on some of the conservation areas statewide where you're required to report your harvest. And then there's also after season reports that are conducted. And so Missouri, along with all the other states, have a pretty good idea of the number of doves that are harvested on an annual basis.
So they are a migratory bird, and if so, where do they come from and where do they go this time?
They are migratory. Well, they're a bird that's covered under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, and so they are federally protected. Not to say that you won't see some around here in the winter. There are some that hang out here. But they will go to Iowa or Minnesota or Wisconsin depending on the weather, and then they'll fly south for the winter. But like I said, not all of them. You'll see some around, you know, in December. There's some hardy ones that stay around.
So I've never noticed a shortage of them. The few times I've gone dove hunting
because you can't hit them.
I can't hit them. So I have not contributed to the depletion of doves. But is that an issue? I mean, I know there's a limit. But it seems kind of high to me.
Yeah, the states keep pretty close track on them, and they ebb and flow, and so, you know, the population is pretty stable on a United States basis. There might be some areas that's going down. Bird species as a whole are declining, and it's from all different types of things. It's from, you know, lead shot in the environment, and it's from, you know, pesticides and climate change. But overall, they're doing well. If they weren't, then the season would be modified to not allow for 15. Season would be either shortened or the limit would be decreased. Yeah, so we keep pretty close track of that.
Okay, I'm putting my tinfoil hat on, Joel, Mark. Do you like my tinfoil hat?
I do like it.
Could it be 5G? Could it be 5G? No, Carl, you don't laugh.
I'm not laughing at
you.
This
is a serious question, because when 5G was being tested overseas, they were finding thousands of birds falling out of the sky.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Google.
That's I will. I'll learn something today.
Now you're laughing.
So cell tower activity. I mean, we've heard the comparison of cell towers and bee activity. You know, bumblebee or honeybee right. activity. You're a biologist. This doesn't come up in your purview, or is it? Am I just a tinfoil hat wearing cowboy?
Yeah, no. We keep track of those types of things as they're popping up, and there's just not enough knowledge known on that right now to make a scientific decision. But there's all types of bird movement studies that are being done. There's all kinds of studies being done on insecticides and wind turbines and bird movements. And so, yeah. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's all I got. Yeah. No, I figured I'd bring it up since we had the expert on. Sorry.
Well, it's a good question. Hopefully people got out. And if you've never tried dove hunting, I would suggest it. Maybe if you don't get to do it this season, plan for it for next year, because it is fun and it's challenging. I mean, I don't even know how you'd get really good at it, because they you never know what they're going to do next.
I bet the hungrier you get, the better.
That's true.
That's right.
Just saying. So let's switch gears here, if you don't mind, to talk about the deer archery season. It starts here on September 15th. Do you also do this, Joel?
I do, yeah. I'm responsible for the statewide managed deer hunts, and then also involved in the deer regulations setting.
So what are we expecting this year? I seems like we did an interview on this, and there were going to be some changes this year in terms of checking the deer afterwards.
There are. Yeah, we've had for about 6 years now mandatory opening weekend of the firearms deer season in certain counties, CWD counties. We've had mandatory check-ins where the folks are required to bring their harvested deer. Last year, it changed to voluntary because of COVID, but we're going.
So meant to be. Second Amendment Radio in the Great Outdoors. It is time to go outdoors. Along with Mark Cox, I'm Bo Matthews. Carl Middleman, DJ extraordinaire. Great song for this.
I didn't go with the Prince, which was too obvious. This is more subtle. And nobody knows that the name of the song is Edge of 17. They just call it White Winged Dove.
Well, thanks for clearing that up. This segment brought to you by Chuck's Boots. You still got a chance to win a Polaris General 1000 side-by-side simply by being a loyal customer. Even if you've never shopped at Chuck's Boots online at chucksboots.com or Fenton or St. Peter's, still go because it'll turn you into a very appreciated customer. Go to chucksboots.com to get registered to win. They've teamed up with Thoroughgood. And you can also go to Chuck's Boots Facebook page to get registered to win the Polaris side-by-side from Thoroughgood and Chuck's Boots.
Yeah, we need to get in there and get signed up. Let me welcome our guest right now, Joel Porath, joining us. He is the Wildlife Section Chief for the Missouri Department of Conservation. And I understand that dove season opened up this week. And boy, I tell you what, Joel, welcome into the show.
Hey, thank you. Good morning, everyone.
I went dove hunting for the first time, I don't know, seven, eight years ago. Took my kid out there with me. I've never been so humbled in my life.
It's hard.
And why?
Because I couldn't hit them. Because they're unlike those little clay pigeons that move away at a decreasing rate of speed. Dove don't do that.
At a steady rate of speed.
Exactly.
And they can move, not a steady path.
Oh, they can turn left or right. Oh, there's the trick.
They can, and then you throw the wind factor in there, and especially on a windy day, you better have a lot of shotgun shells.
Oh, I know. I know. We limited out that day. I took my kid, who was a good trap shooter. He was humbled as well, but he caught on to it faster than I did with those young eyes. I'll have to tell you that.
So are they good eating, Joel? Are they good eating? Is that the reason people do it, or what is it?
They are good eating. You know, there's a couple different things. One, it's the first season that really opens up, and so there's folks that have been, you know, itching to get out and enjoy nature all summer, and the dove hunting is the first, you know, real opportunity to do that. You know, you don't need a lot of equipment. You don't need a lot of good camo. You know, you can sit there with your friends and visit and have a great time just, you know, practicing your shooting. And yeah, they are really good to eat. There's many different ways to cook them. A lot of folks think that they're pretty small, but, you know, with a limit of 15, you know, you can grill them, broil them, fry them, all different types of ways to cook them. They're very good.
Yeah, that was our experience. And you know, maybe that's something to talk about for just a moment. I wonder, does the Missouri Department of Conservation make suggested, do you have a suggested cookbook for wild game? Because, you know, whenever I go hunting with friends, whether it's for pheasant or chucker or whatever it happens to be, there's always somebody in the group who goes, oh, I got a great recipe for that. I don't seem to be able to pull that off very well. I have to go to their house and let them cook it for me. Because I'm just not very talented at getting that. Because there's a key to getting that sometimes gaminess out of it.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. On our mdc.mo.gov website, there is all different types of recipes. And then there's also a wild game cookbook that we put out. And so that'd be a great opportunity for you and your listeners to take a look at that.
Is there a restaurant in St. Louis that features wild game like that? Does the Big Chief Dakota Grill do dove? I've never heard of a restaurant that did that.
Yeah, there's not, and that's you know, that's one of the reasons why we are where we are in the world today. That, you know, around the turn of the century, there was the game markets were abounding, and so that was the demise of a lot of different game species as folks were able to go out and hunt them and then sell them to the market. And so when market hunting was outlawed, then a lot of those game species started to come back. And so that's the, you know, the North American model of wildlife conservation is that they're for the people and managed, you know, by the conservation department, but they're not for sale.
Do you keep track of the dove season the way the conservation department keeps track of others? I mean, in terms of the number harvested, or how exactly do you guys approach that?
We do. There's a couple different methods that are utilized. One is putting metal bands on their legs, same thing that we do with waterfowl, and there's a lot of different states that do that. And so you can utilize band recovery data. So, you know, say, for example, there's a dove that's banded in Missouri and it's harvested in Texas. And once you compile all that information, you can get kind of an idea of where they were harvested and then extrapolate to the numbers that are harvested. We also have surveys that are conducted on some of the conservation areas statewide where you're required to report your harvest. And then there's also after season reports that are conducted. And so Missouri, along with all the other states, have a pretty good idea of the number of doves that are harvested on an annual basis.
So they are a migratory bird, and if so, where do they come from and where do they go this time
of year? They are migratory. Well, they're a bird that's covered under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, and so they are federally protected. Not to say that you won't see some around here in the winter. There are some that hang out here. But they will go to Iowa or Minnesota or Wisconsin depending on the weather, and then they'll fly south for the winter. But like I said, not all of them. You'll see some around, you know, in December. There's some hardy ones that stay around.
So I've never noticed a shortage of them. The few times I've gone dove hunting
because you can't hit them.
I can't hit them, so I have not contributed to the depletion of doves. But is that an issue? I mean, I know there's a limit. But it seems kind of high to me.
Yeah, the states keep pretty close track on them, and they ebb and flow, and so, you know, the population is pretty stable on a United States basis. There might be some areas that's going down. Bird species as a whole are declining, and it's from all different types of things. It's from, you know, lead shot in the environment, and it's from, you know, pesticides and climate change. But overall, they're doing well. If they weren't, then the season would be modified to not allow for 15. Season would be either shortened or the limit would be decreased. Yeah, so we keep pretty close track of that.
Okay, I'm putting my tinfoil hat on, Joel, Mark. Do you like my tinfoil hat?
I do like it.
Could it be 5G? Could it be 5G? No. Carl, you don't laugh.
I'm not laughing
this
at you.
This is a serious question, because when 5G was being tested overseas, they were finding thousands of birds falling out of the sky.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Google.
That's I will. I'll learn something today.
Now you're laughing.
So cell tower activity. I mean, we've heard the comparison of cell towers and bee activity. You know, bumblebee or honeybee right. activity. You're a biologist. This doesn't come up in your purview, or is it? Am I just a tinfoil hat wearing cowboy?
Yeah, no. We keep track of those types of things as they're popping up, and there's just not enough knowledge known on that right now to make a scientific decision. But there's all types of bird movement studies that are being done. There's all kinds of studies being done on insecticides and wind turbines and bird movements. And so, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah. That's all I got. Yeah. No, I figured I'd bring it up since we had the expert on. Sorry.
Well, it's a good question. Hopefully people got out. And if you've never tried dove hunting, I would suggest it. Maybe if you don't get to do it this season, plan for it for next year, because it is fun and it's challenging. I mean, I don't even know how you'd get really good at it, because they you never know what they're going to do next.
I bet the hungrier you get, the better.
That's true.
That's right.
Just saying. So let's switch gears here, if you don't mind, to talk about the deer archery season. It starts here on September 15th. Do you also do this, Joel?
I do, yeah. I'm responsible for the statewide managed deer hunts, and then also involved in the deer regulations setting.
So what are we expecting this year? I seems like we did an interview on this, and there were going to be some changes this year in terms of checking the deer afterwards.
There are. Yeah, we've had for about 6 years now mandatory opening weekend of the firearms deer season in certain counties, CWD counties. We've had mandatory check-ins where the folks are required to bring their harvested deer. Last year it changed to voluntary because of COVID, but we're going back again this year to in certain counties you are required on those 2 days, the opening weekend of firearms deer season, to present your deer to one of those stations.
Do we have any records that are possibly on the cusp of being broken when it comes to deer hunting? Rack size, anything like that that you know of?
Not really. Missouri does have a pretty good. Well, we have a very, very stable or increasing deer herd, and yeah, it seems like every few years there's one of those record monster bucks that pops up and is harvested in Missouri. But I think that we've got our regulations set pretty good to keep the harvest kind of where we want it to be, and then hopefully some folks will be able to find and harvest some of those larger, older age class bucks.
Yeah, I feel like I need to ask, since this is the guy in charge. None of those big bucks ever seem to pop up near me. You got any advice for me?
Don't stand near a 5G tower.
I don't know
tower.
What it is.
Yeah, that's funny you say that. They don't ever seem to present themselves to me either.
I know. I've never
taken a buck that was suitable for mounting. I'll have to say that.
when it comes to hunting of anything, deer, dove season, do you see an increase in permits being purchased to do this or tags being purchased? Because and I'm not going to freak out here. I'm not a prepper. Okay, I've got some dehydrated food. I'll be honest with you. What? I'm trying to be a good American.
No,
you freak.
You.
Why would
you
do that? Anyway, I've noticed in the grocery stores and even in the big box warehouse store, it doesn't look decimated like a hurricane's coming, but there are holes on the shelf. And I'm like, what is going on? And we've all heard about supply chains. So my question is there more hunters that are going to be out there this archery season or for doves?
Well, what we saw last year, and it was specifically COVID related, is that when everything shut down in the spring, then we saw a pretty substantial increase in fishing permits, in turkey hunting permits, and then that kind of stayed throughout the fall. And other states saw the same thing too. Folks working from home had more of an opportunity to take off and go out and hunt. My guess is that that'll stabilize a little bit, but it's still yet to be seen. The hopes are is that it increases. It's a great opportunity to go out and and harvest, for a deer example, harvest a deer and you can get 60 or 70 pounds of a very lean venison off of that.
Absolutely.
We have a lot of different efforts that we've been working on and that we're thinking about for the future to recruit and retain hunters.
As far as an increase in firearm sales, Mark Cox, a very wise man that I know, last week coined the phrase of more stimulus guns were sold last year.
Yeah.
that is true.
That's a good point. We're talking to Joel Porath. He's the wildlife section chief for the Department of Conservation. You also have a drawing coming up for waterfowl.
We do. Yeah, we have the way that we handle the waterfowl drawing or waterfowl hunting here in Missouri on 15 areas specifically is that there's a preseason drawing and the applications are from September 1st to September 18th. And that drawing allocates 25% of the available spots. And then during the season on a weekly basis, there's another drawing electronically that allocates the other 25%, and then there's also 50% that's available in what we call a pour line. And so you can just show up on an area and try to draw in on a specific day that you want to hunt. And so that's on 15 intensively managed wetland areas. There's also plenty of other waterfowl hunting opportunities that you don't have to go through a drawing here in Missouri.
Well, good to know. Listen, Joel, it's been a pleasure having you on the radio, and we're glad we could spend a little bit of time and educate people on all this.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Folks should go to mdc.mo.gov to get more information, and I hope everyone has a safe and enjoyable fall hunting season.
And if you go to their hunting and trapping section and go to the drop-down menu, all the way to the left, recipes.
Oh! Yes.
You found it. Good.
Good.
Awesome. Have you ever hunted Canadian geese?
I have not.
I knew the guy that was the equivalent of Phil Robertson on ducks down in southern Illinois. He passed away in an ATV accident, but I talked to his wife after he passed, and I said, so are you like Miss Kay? Do you cook up the geese? And she's like, I hate those things. They're greasy. Well, why am I going to go out there and do that? Because I'm hungry.
Everybody's got their thing, don't they? That's good. Hey, Joel, thank you. We'll check in with you again.
All right, sounds good. You guys have a great day.
Thanks, Joel. Yeah, thank you for that. It's good. We got to get you out to dove hunting.
Oh, man. I'd love to.
It's a hard place to start, let me tell you.
Are you on a swivel?
Oh, your feet.
Oh, walking? Oh.
No. So when we dove hunted, we just went along. They had cornrows where they would mow the middle of it, and you would just set up. They had little cutouts in some of the rows of corn, and you'd just bring a chair and sit down and wait until the doves, they would fly in because they wanted to feed on the corn.
So they do come in flocks?
Yeah.
Okay, like duck?
There's quite a few of them, actually, that'll come in, and then you have to just try to hit them.
Okay. Well, yeah. So
good luck with that.
Do you have to be good at skeet shooting to be good at this?
It would help.
Okay. Well, I'm out.
It didn't help me a lot, but it would help.
I'll see you at the fast food drive-thru. I'll take a McDove sandwich, please. You got that on the menu? Oh, boy.
That does it for this week's edition of Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors.
All right, Mark, great hanging with you. Carl, thank you for all you do with the great DJ and music mixing. And thanks for listening. Please share the podcast because Second Amendment Radio and the Great Outdoors is also a podcast. Just go to the Odyssey app.
See you next week.
See you, boys.
Get more at 971talk.com.